The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Good morning, David Doval.
Good morning.
Travels go well?
All went well. Got to see Plumber Tim.
Good deal.
Spend a little time with him. Say a little prayer for him. He's in the struggle bus, and, you know, it's just that time. That's that time.
So yeah.
He's been through it.
Yeah. Well, lots of prayers in that direction.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We got to spend his birthday with him. So it was his 69th, and he was happy we were there. I fixed their tractor for him while I was there, so she was real happy. She could cut the grass.
That's a good deal.
So yeah,
awesome. Well, we're ready for a couple hours of home improvement. We're at 704-570-1110, taking questions, talking about what's important around the house, around the property. We're I think through the pollen stuff. Now we're into oak tags.
Yes.
The plenteous gifts from the local flora and fauna. But it's all good. It's time of year. I'd rather be here than in the dead of winter for sure.
Yeah.
We've got a great bunch of stuff to talk about this morning. Mostly, if you call at 704-570-1110, we'll talk about what's important to you. But we've got a pretty good list of things. We hadn't talked about it in a while, and it came up last week, David, on the one of the questions that we had was cleaning or preventing moss. Actually, it started out with a question about light color versus dark color roof, and we kind of touched on the issue that we have with fungus in this neck of the woods. So we'll talk a little more detail on that. We should probably talk a little bit about some decks. Spray foam came up in an unusual scenario, so I thought we could talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
LED lights. I was looking at a bunch of old, I guess we call them tips of the week now they call them hacks, but there's some stuff that's changed. Like, we wouldn't even talk about it anymore. With different technology advancements, I was like, I think we did that. Didn't we do that like one show? We just said, okay, is this still relevant or not? I feel like we did.
Yeah, I think we went through a bunch of them.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back and take a look at that.
Most of them still are.
Yeah, for the most part, they were. LED has changed a lot from a lighting perspective, which is good. And then, let's see. Oh, we got some nail pops and drywall. We got some garbage disposal questions. We got some waterproofing questions. Oh, here's one. I just threw it in here for grins. How to wire a phone jack. Okay? Who's doing that anymore? Seriously. I don't think. Like, I wired Ethernet jacks for my office because I wanted a home run, Ethernet cable from, the modem or whatever
right.
it is, from the router down to the
to
office
the source,
and stuff.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Or to the... Yeah, that's nice.
And that's kind of a big fat pain in the fanny.
Yeah, I hired somebody to do all of mine, but I ran them to all the rooms that have TVs, even if there's not a TV in there, then which there's not. But we ran jacks so that we could plug the smart TVs directly into the internet and not have to worry about Wi-Fi, which is, and people said, oh, wow, why would you do that? And I said, well, because...
Yeah, I can give you a pretty lengthy list of dates in my life where I wish I had done that.
Yeah. And it's, well, I mean, the walls are open. It's easy. So
true.
But you just buy, 1,000 foot of cable or whatever you need and you run it. And
it's not expensive. The cable's not expensive.
It's really not. And then we did some cameras as well. So we put those on the corners of the house and ran those. And that's PoE, so power over Ethernet, right?
Right.
So yeah, so if you could put those cables, but I knew a young man that worked for a cable company and he does that He has a little side business, and so I hired him to come out, and he terminated all of that stuff, and I didn't have to deal with it.
Yeah, it is a little wonky. Yeah. To, you know, I forget, there's like parallel serial, I'm probably not getting the terminology right, but depending on what you're doing, you have to wire the jack slightly differently.
Right.
And anyway, it was fun. It worked. I mean, here we are. So apparently it worked. Let's see what else. Ethernet. That's it. That's all the stuff that we got going on this morning.
So we're done?
Huh? Oh, we're done. Yeah, let's go get a cup of coffee.
Wow.
Let's grab John Moore and go get some biscuits.
Hope John has a best of.
Now we're taking him with us.
Yeah, let's go. He can just turn it on. We go.
Just turn it on. Here we go. Oh, my gosh. That wouldn't be bad. What about emails? What does that traffic look like, David?
It's got to have a couple in there, and I have not answered them either, so it was a busy week.
Ruh-roh. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, that's okay, but I'll get it.
All right. Well, let's do our first break. It'll be a chance for me to go get some coffee, even if I can't go to get biscuits with the two of you. 704-570-1110, that's the number. Give us a call. We'll talk when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. Hey, David, we had a good chat with Jared from Home Depot last week. That man can talk 90 miles a second.
So he's an auctioneer.
He could be. Now, he has a bunch of good information. I always feel bad, though, like we're trying to get all that information in. He puts all that stuff together for us, you know. Anyway, it was good. We got a product of the week coming up after one of these segments, and it kind of came from some inspirations from Jared, so that'll be good. Right now, we should talk about whatever is important to you. Give us a call, 704-570-1110. The first thing that I put on here, David, this morning was a throwback to last week. We had a gentleman call us, and he wanted to talk about, he wanted to know dark roof or light roof, you know, from an energy wise perspective. And of course, we shared that the light roof was definitely the better way to go, and then reminded him that the challenge that he would face was, you know, Glioplasma maxus or something like that, whatever that the fungus is that grows on our roofs. Because,
right,
you know, right?
You can see it a little more, right?
Yeah. And so we talked about moss strip. And we spoke of, you know, fungus resistant shingles that have, you know, copper granules kind of mixed in with the granules at large. And certainly, you know, they're good. But I think our consensus was, and I haven't really tested the waters or anything else on it recently, our consensus was that the moss strip was kind of like the foolproof way to go. And we hadn't talked about that in a while. And,
right.
And actually, I didn't go to the Home Depot website or just Google moss strip to see if it was out there. We should try that. But moss strip. Anyway, it was. We talked about it briefly, but we'll take a second on it now. And it's really a piece of zinc or it's zinc. It's not galvanized per se. I think it's a zinc component or zinc alloy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it goes at the top of the roof. You can get it at Home Depot. 2.67 inches by 50 foot long. You run it underneath the highest course or the last course of shingles before the ridge cap.
Correct.
And then the water hits it and it kind of dissolves technically a little bit of the zinc in the strip every time it rains, and that runs down the roof and it kind of gets caught up in the granules, and the zinc is a hostile environment for the fungus. I used to always explain it, you know, when you drive, I always think about it driving down east, or when we used to drive from Charlotte to Wilmington, you would see a church with a big, you know, with a traditional kind of roof and then steeple on it, and it would be a white roof and it would be all gray or black with fungus, except where the steeple was, because the steeple was copper, and the copper got washed out of the, you know, the flashing, the metal flashing, whatever that made up the steel,
right.
The steeple, and it just washed down the roof below the steeple. Then the steeple was always squeaky clean, or beneath the steeple was always squeaky clean.
Yeah, you see it around the vent stacks with the flashings. Right. Anytime there's a flashing like that, that was it's pretty interesting how that works out. And then I wonder if we don't hear as much about it because the shingles contain the products, and then, you know, then there's a ridge vent too,
right?
So I don't see it being installed very often, because you can tell on a steeper roof, you can see it, see that strip. But I didn't put one on, and so far so good. I mean, we have all south sun on the back of the roof, and I think so far it's doing its job.
Yeah, that's cool. And it could very well be that our original, or the technology from a fungicide, you know, in the granules itself, is it has stepped their game up or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I thought, hey, if you got it, if you have an old roof, and I don't think it would be very effective it wouldn't quickly resolve issues where you had bad fungus. You put the zinc strip up and expect it to clear up.
Yeah, no.
Maybe for your grandkids, but not for you.
Right. Yeah. So you'd have to do a roof wash, or spray the roof down with some type of product that would kill it. I mean, a lot of it would be bleach, but sodium carbonate. Not bisodium carbonate, but sodium carbonate works, which is essentially pH up for your pool. But you could mix that up and you could spray it on there too. It's just, you know, it just raises the alkalinity, pretty much like concrobium does.
Yeah, exactly.
So it works. I believe that would work too. I don't know if it would make it disappear, but if I ever get the opportunity, I'll test it and I'll let you know.
Yeah. Well, let's hope you don't get the opportunity. Find a neighbor who needs some help.
Well, there's a few in the neighborhood that I think need it. So.
Mind if I mess with your roof?
So happens that I happen to have 4 or 5 gallon buckets of sodium carbonate.
4 or 5 gallon for your pool?
I did, yeah. And I ordered one bucket and I received 4. And I called them and I told them, and they said, well, if you could take that on down to the UPS store. And I said, you delivered it. You need to come pick it up.
And so there it waits.
And they said, you can just keep it. I said, okay. I don't know what I'm going to do with all of it, but.
Find a neighbor.
I've asked everyone. Nobody wants it.
Nobody wants it. Speaking of that, I have a roof light in my garage that has your name on it. A Velux, it's not a skylight. It's, you know, the little dome thing that lets roof in. I think I told you I'd get that to you maybe, 6 years ago, 7 years ago? Barbara reminded me now. I was like, is David going to take that thing? I said, if I get it to him. All right. Let's talk about decking. Wood deck versus composite deck. You're in a jam. Somebody forces you to make a decision in 1.2 seconds or less. David Dovall, wood or composite? What say ye?
I would go with the newer composites.
Newer composites, but you have an adjective, newer composites. Why?
The older stuff was it was fine when it first came out, but after, like anything, after a little age, time, sun, we find out that it was, it changes colors for one. Two, it was having mold problems from the inside because the moisture after the decking was breaking down a little bit, moisture was actually getting into the composite, and then people were getting mold and mildew through it.
Yeah.
So it's not a good thing. I know you had the original, and it turned pink, didn't it?
Yeah. People have stress dreams, like, about different things. Like, some people dream that they're in car wrecks. Some people dream that they're in plane wrecks. Some people dream that, you know, you park your car somewhere and you keep walking around, you can't find your car. I had a stress dream that my deck was pink, like bright pink. And then I went to my deck. Oh, well, it's not bright pink. Anyway, yeah, so I say that. What about the hot stuff? Because they're hot. A composite deck can be pretty hot.
It gets pretty hot. So does a wood deck, though.
I was going to say, yeah, so it's like a difference of degrees, right?
Yeah, I think maybe the, I think the wood probably gives the heat off a little faster than the plastic does. Nah. So that might be the only advantage. I guess the most important takeaway for that is just make sure you have a pair of sandals or shoes, or if you're walking out in the middle of the day. I've seen many people step on those decks, come barefooted, walk up the steps, and then watch them hot foot.
They're suddenly like street dancers, you know, break
yeah.
dancers.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's just funny when they're carrying a cooler, though.
Man, you are cruel. All right. So I was going to ask you a legitimate question. Now you made me forget. I know. I think, and I don't know if this is timing is right, whether I should give, you know, composite decks credit for this or not. I feel like the whole concept of hidden hangers became really prevalent is when something is both present and relevant. It's prevalent. Oh boy. I think hidden hangers became like a big deal with composite decking, or maybe not.
Well, yeah, because you can hide the fasteners. In the first generation, we were using P&L adhesive and pin nails,
right,
to hold it in place, and it actually worked. Really
I did
well.
That on a couple spots that I just needed to do that. Yeah, it's still there. Whatever it is,
yeah, it doesn't move. And I mean, I don't know what happens when you go to take it apart. You'll have a mess because you can't just pop them off of the joist. I mean, there'll have to be some scraping going on and probably replacing some of the wood, I would imagine, the joists themselves. But now you don't want to penetrate this because the newer composites are a wrap. So it right. has a wrap around them, and that is, it's composite underneath, but they're protecting
it's a PVC it. Thing on top, yeah.
Correct. So they protect it. But, you know, the darker colors. But we did one last year in August for a customer, and it's gorgeous. It turned out really nice. It was expensive, you know.
Have you ever tried the curving stuff to, you know, heating it up and curving it?
No, I have not.
I don't even know if you can do that with the new PVC stuff. It looks slick when they do it, though.
This is my only thing about it. I know we got to go to a break. Now I'm going to say this real quick, but I worry about the grooves for the hidden fastener because
they get distorted.
The wrap stops at the groove, and then the groove is essentially open. So does it take on water? What happens? Do they start swelling? Oh, you know, who knows what's going to happen over time? I guess we'll see, won't we?
We will. I hope not to know. 704-570-1110. That's the number. Give us a call. We'll talk about your home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're at 704-570-1110. Pardon me, 704-570-1110. It's time for our Home Depot Product of the Week. This was inspired by our buddy Jared last week, going through all the cool stuff, getting ready for being outdoors. it's the Loco, L-O-C-O, 26-inch two-burner classic smart temp propane flat-top grill. And it actually has a cool chalk finish. I mean, a lot of people don't worry about what the finish looks like, but this one looks actually pretty cool. Here's why I think this is really good. So it's two burners in a flat-top grill. Oh, yeah, on any grill, you can kind of have hot spots and cold spots, but it's particularly prevalent. I'm having a really bad pee day. It's particularly prevalent when you have a flat surface grill. The burners, the design of the burners on this particular Loco grill fundamentally eliminate cold spots and hot spots. It's got a thermostat, so you can set it and the temperature stays the same. It doesn't require electricity for the thermostat and the, you know, the smart device to run and, you know, moderate the gas flow to keep the temperature where it needs to be. And it doesn't require access to a second mortgage. Coming in at $275.
Wow.
Boom. That's it. It's our Home Depot product of the week this week. Love it. Check it out. All right. Back to questions. David, we're kind of sticking with the roof for a sec. Well, again, this came up last week in a roof discussion. And the scenario was replacing a roof where the attic has been, where spray foam has been applied to the attic. And, you know, we talked about different things, but I think the message that we wanted to make sure we got out there was, hey, when you have, you know, spray foam in the attic, if it, particularly if they've used a closed cell foam, it's a little easier to catch a leak or something if open cell foam was used. But I think they traditionally use a closed cell foam in the rafters.
And if, at the coast, they do, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's where it has to go because they don't want humidity pushing through.
Right.
Because it's just as bad as moisture coming through the top. So I guess they take the lesser of the two evils.
But the risk there is when is damage or, you know, issues with the roof that you can't see. They don't manifest in the attic because it's covered up by foam.
Right.
So, you know, we gave the guidance to, hey, just really walk that roof thoroughly, not literally, but, you know, would inspect the roof to make sure that there's no spots, particularly around any penetrations, right? So the vent pipe, or if there's fossil fuel, the chimney,
mm-hmm.
or even like the PVC, you know, from a high efficiency.
Right.
But
and
then
I ran all that stuff out the side walls for that purpose. And then the vents, the plumbing vents, we have four penetrations on our roof, and I used the perma vent over the stacks. So you put your regular flashing collar around it, and then this fits over top of all of it. And what it does is it protects that from the sun and the heat, and essentially you never have to change them. They're $20 a piece, so it's worth every penny.
Yeah, a small investment for,
you know,
for,
plus to it's save a problem. It's a 9-12 pitch, and
you don't want to walk up there anymore?
I don't want to go up there anymore. I can't go up there anymore.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't want to.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I don't do height stuff the way I used to anymore either.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So totally get it. All right, so what about what comments, though, or thoughts, precautions are around spray foam? Because we really just last week said, hey, check the outside of the roof when you got all the shingles and the felt paper off.
Yeah, I mean, that's key. That is exactly what you want to do, is you want to do a thorough inspection, make sure there's no water staining. If there is, if it looks like there's anything soft, you need to pop it up, the plywood, and you need to check the rafter and make sure it's not a problem. You know, a lot of folks don't know about cedar shields. So if you had a soft spot in the rafter, if you could stop the moisture, you make sure it's not getting back through, and you don't have very much damage on the rafter, you could actually treat that. You would want to treat it and not just leave it and cover it up,
right,
which I'm afraid is what happens most of the time. Even if you use the wood hardener by Minwax, which is, you know, that's readily available. If you need cedar shield, you can't just walk in the store somewhere and get that. You have to have that on hand or order. Unless
right.
you go over to Zeke's house. He's got 2 5-gallon pails. But
let me guess, he ordered one and they shipped two.
No, he ordered two. He's going to do his fence. He hasn't done it yet. But I told him I'd make him a really good offer on that cedar shield, but he hasn't taken that yet. But yeah, so you would want to make sure that the roofer is paying attention to that. If you're foam, this is kind of a whole new thing now that we're starting to look at. So you do have to pay attention to that. And we did some foam on a job just recently, and I was talking to the foam guys. We're going to have those guys on pretty soon too, to talk about that. I thought that might be a good subject. But anyway, I had asked them about one of the thoughts, you know, my little pea brain's always thinking about things, and I thought about the styrofoam baffle. So if you were going to use open cell foam or closed, if you wanted to use closed cell foam on a roof, what if you stapled the styrofoam baffles all the way up your roof to a ridge vent? And if you still put a ridge vent in place and you still put a soffit vent, but you foamed over the baffles.
Over the baffle boards.
and you leave the air space so that you still would ventilate your roof, and then you would still have the opportunity, if there was a leak, that it would drip on the styrofoam and run down and into the soffit, the vented soffit. And if you used a vinyl soffit, it would
drip, not a vent. Yeah.
It would drip out, and then you would potentially see it if it was sweating. You would be able to tell. So, and I asked them about that, and they said they never really thought about it, and they were gonna ponder that a little bit and look into it and see if that was something viable.
Huh. Very cool. All right. I hear music. I think we should take a break. 704-570-1110. That's the number. Give us a call. We'll talk about the home improvement questions you have when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're taking your calls this morning at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. We've got Alan is going to join us. Good morning, Alan. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hello? You're kind of soft.
Hello, Alan.
Yeah,
are you there?
Is. He's a little soft.
I'm way soft. Okay. I haven't been in the gym since COVID.
Yes, sir. I'm having gaps along the length of the house in doors, and they're sticking.
Yeah.
And in the kitchen, there's a gap about a half inch. It goes small and large at times.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you need the house level for? Or?
Well, you're moving up and down with the season changes. I've got a couple of customers that have that problem.
It's worth getting checked out.
Yeah, it is.
Right, because a problem or no problem could manifest the same way. If it's simply a matter of humidity, it's going to get bigger and smaller, bigger as things dry out, smaller as the humidity increases. Also, if it's a foundation issue, it's going to get bigger, you know, as ground dries out or things shift, or it's smaller as you get rain and so on. And with a reputable foundation partner, they'll take a look and tell you that's not a problem, and off you go, or that is a problem, and help deal with it. David, I mean, maybe I oversimplified that. I don't know.
No, that's exactly.
Do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, you could try Dry Pro for that. They do all things crawl space, so they can handle the foundation, piers. You know, if it's a humidity problem, that's the nice thing, is that they can kind of get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Now, I need a roof. Do I have to wait to put the roof on, or can I do that now?
You can if you need a roof on it, you probably need to get that done as soon as possible. If you're leaking or having problems with it.
Okay, so I can do the roof before I have that.
Yeah, it won't make any difference.
It won't hurt.
Won't make a difference.
No.
Okay, that sounds good. I appreciate it, gentlemen.
Well, Alan, thank you for your call, sir. Have a good day.
Yeah. You too, sir.
Bye. All right, not so bad. Good to get good advice.
Yeah, that was, and when he says that, so, and you said it exactly right, John, when it's dry, the ground shrinks, and when it gets wet, it swells, so it will tend to lift and push, and it'll drop. And so the cure for, if you have piers, or if you have a footing on the outside that's doing it, or a footing under a pier, what they need to do is they need to get deeper into the soil and get something down where it's not moving.
Right.
And then that way the soil can move around the footing, but it's being held up by a jack, so to speak, that's or a screw that's pushed down into the soil, either to rock or to a high pressure, so that you're just not affected by it. But I have a friend out in the Weddington area that his house was doing that, and it's pumping, and that's what they have. So in the summertime, they have a hump in their kitchen, and in the winter, they don't. And they've done drop girders. They've done all kinds of things. Actually, I think the drop girder made it worse because the soil was pumping. But he has it in his driveway that it's constantly lifting and raising and cracking and breaking.
Wow. Wow.
And it's just poor soil. You know, there's not a lot. And, you know, and that driveway was redone. We put huge rock underneath it to try to stabilize it. But all that's happening is the dirt's pushing on the rock. and then the rock's pushing against the concrete, and it's still cracking and breaking. And
darn that physics stuff.
I know. I know. How do you get around it? So it is what it is. You know, it's the.
I was at a. This is out in Tolliver County, Georgia. Like, it's just maybe 45 minutes to an hour from Augusta. It's old, old country church. And it was like there were no cracks anywhere. But in the middle, if you walked up the middle aisle, there was this ridge. And if you put a tennis ball, you know, at the center, it would run to the left or to the right, like, quickly. It was like almost like you felt like you needed sea legs to walk up the aisle. But there were no cracks or anything. Like, it had shifted over the time. I thought, that's just bizarre. But I don't know.
So it was truly an accomplishment when you do an altar call.
It's like, he's the spirit is moving.
And you a little workout, too.
He staggered up. All right. Let's see. 704-570-1110. That's the number. Dimmer switch. Dimmer switch was a challenge. And I'll boil it all down. If most of the light bulbs, if you're buying, you know, the right kind of light bulbs, in my opinion, with a handful of exceptions, you're buying an LED bulb. Mm-hmm. Dimmer switches, a conventional dimmer switch does not work with an LED bulb, correct?
Correct.
What you got to do?
You have to go to a dimmer switch that's designed for LED.
Why you make it sound so simple?
Because it is. It's just that simple.
But there's.
And so, it's cheaper when you buy them in three packs, I just want to say, because there's a little sticker shock when you go. You remember dimmers used to be $6-$8?
Yeah, because it was just a little rheostat.
Right. Now they're $30 for one, if that's even the price now. But we have them all throughout our house. We use dimmers because we have lots of can lights, and we wanted to be able to control it. And I just found that if you buy the dimmers in bulk packs, you can get them for about $20-$22 a piece, something like that. So it's a little savings.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good. And there's an adjustment in it. What makes it so expensive is there's an adjustment in it. An LED bulb. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute because there's another. We'll go right to it. There's an adjustment inside of it that you use mm-hmm. to set the high low on the dimming aspect of it. And then once you set that correctly, you put the cover on, and then you can, you know, use whatever, if it's a slide, you know, or a dial, whatever it is, you can make it work. I was going to go to the scenario where an LED bulb is blinking on and off, and that could be a dimmer problem if you've got it on a dimmer. But more often, the reason you have to make the adjustment on an LED dimmer is the driver. I think that's the right terminology in the actual bulb itself. Correct. There's a device. LED stands for light emitting diode. So you got to get power to this diode, and then when it gets electricity, it emits a light. And if that's not getting adequate power from this driver device, and again, I don't know if I'm using the right terminology, but if you've got an LED bulb that's doing that, one of two things: check to make sure it's not on a dimmer switch. Check to make sure your neutral, the wires in the switch are tight. But very frequently, it's just a bad driver in the bulb.
Mm-hmm.
And here is the most complex solution: change the bulb.
Change the bulb. There you go.
How many people does it take to change a light bulb, David? How many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know. How many?
Indefinite. It's undetermined because the light bulb has to want to change.
I knew that was coming.
Did you?
Okay. Hey, I was going to tell you, too, a couple of cool little things about bulbs, and a lot of people may know about this, and some may have been, some don't, but they have many of these LED bulbs now have built-in day-night sensing. So, you know, it used to be you had to have the attachment for motion and then a photo cell to determine whether the light wouldn't come on. So if you left the spotlight on all the time, or you could, you would be able to turn that switch on and that bulb would sense that it was getting dark, and then that light could come on and now they have those in the bulbs, but also motion sensors
yes.
that are built into the bulb. And it was cool because I was able to I built a couple of post lights out at our driveway near the road, and I had run a wire out there for outlets, and so I tagged off of those, and then I have a bulb, but I'm like, oh great, now I got to put a motion sensor, and I found those bulbs, and so those bulbs come on at dusk and go off at dawn.
Really?
And it is very cool, and it's just it looks like a traditional regular incandescent bulb is all it looks like.
Huh.
So, and then I have spotlights that have the motion sensors in them, and you control them with the switch. So if you want that light to stay on all the time, you turn it off and turn it right back on.
Yeah.
And if you want it to go into the motion sensing mode, then you turn it off for 3 seconds and then turn it back on, and it'll come on and off automatically. Okay. So pretty cool. And they're only like $19 a piece for the bulb. So pretty cool.
That is pretty great. Let's see. We have time here. We're gonna need to take a break. Frank, we see you out there. Don't go away. We've got to take a break here. We'll do that. If you don't mind holding, we'll catch your question because it looks like a good one when we return. It's 570-1110, 704-570-1110. That's our number. Give us a call. We'll talk when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back. It's the second hour of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. That's our number. Frank has done precisely that. Frank, thanks for waiting through the break. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Doing well. What's up?
Well, so I'm in the process, the very beginning process of selling a home up in the foothills, and I was asked to get a radon test.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and it came back a little high at 4.2, and they suggested I need to get some remediation done. And I'm just trying to figure out that process, what kind of pricing am I going to look at to get that to take place, and what really to expect.
So not surprised, I think, that you're in the foothills. I think radon is a function of shouldn't speculate, but
decaying granite.
Granite, exactly. So, but mitigation, depending on the severity, it sounds like it's not so terrible, is really a function of just ventilation, isn't it, David?
That's pretty much what it is. They're just gonna take air from the basement or the crawl space and move it out.
So they'll bring fresh air in.
Yeah, it's just an ERV essentially.
Yeah,
energy recovery ventilation.
You can. I mean, there's. If you look online, you can. Careful how I say this. There's probably a do-it-yourself version of radon mitigation, and it's simply like bringing fresh air in, and it filters, the air coming in, and it brings fresh air in and exhausts some of the crawl space air, and voila, you're done.
Well, that sounds easy enough. Like, could it just
It is, and I think you can achieve the same thing, if I'm not mistaken, if you just turn the air over in the house, mixing it with outside air, which may be the better thing to do. I don't know. You may want to talk to your HVAC contractor about that, and see which is the better deal: ERV for the air conditioning and heating system, or just ventilating the crawl space and moving that air.
So David, I just while we were talking here, I just jumped on the a website. Other ways to reduce radon: increase airflow in your house by opening windows and using fans and vents to circulate air. Natural ventilation, seal cracks in floors and walls,
keep that a separate envelope. So
yeah,
air sealing in newer homes takes care of almost all of that with what we're talking about.
Right.
So. That would be good. And what was the? And you said you were 4.2.
4.2.
What was the?
Yeah, 4.2.
What's the
four?
Four is the threshold.
Well, yeah, cutoff was the four mark, and just kind of go a little further in the story. So the home has not been essentially lived in on and off for the past 2 years.
Okay.
And just the ventilation.
Shut up. You just answered all of it.
Yeah. Right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you need to do is just do another home test after you're in and out, because that's part of the testing that tells you in the package is that you need to leave
the doors
closed and windows closed. So you want to see if it builds up. So ventilation, we had that problem in a condo that we were in. It was a little bit high, and it wasn't coming from the ground. It was coming from the rock that was in the concrete walls that were behind the drywall. So this built up over time, and so we just cracked patio doors open and turned our exhaust fans on in the bathroom and just let them run all the time. So,
yeah, there's an image on this particular website that I'm on, Frank, and it just shows it's a ERV. It's a device outside the house. It runs up, you know, in this one, it's a brick home and it doesn't penetrate the roof at all. It just runs up the side of the house. It's got filter on. It's drawing air out, bringing new air in. But you're at 4.2, where 4 is the threshold. You've been locked up. I think I would get everything moving and going and retest, because I think you're probably okay.
I do too.
Well, that's great advice, and I appreciate the show, y'all. Love listening to it, and thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks for calling.
Good luck. Thanks
for listening. All right, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. Radon sounds like a scary thing, right? Like you expect something to be glowing after being exposed to radon. It's not. If you go and look, health hazards, highly elevated levels of radon, they're not good, right? So I don't want to dismiss it, but it's at 4.2 shouldn't be a terrible thing to mess with. So did we exhaust, no pun intended, the LED light questions? I think we did.
I think so. I just think just study it a little bit and you'll see all kinds of cool things. We've talked about the changing out the bulbs in your can lights. So if you have can lights and there's an attic over it, if you go up there, you'll see that the insulation is moved away from them and you're leaking air. You could put, if you use LED bulbs in there, you're in much better shape and you can cover them up. So, they're allowed for insulation contact. Now the actual fixture is still not rated for insulation contact, but if you're not running a 90 watt bulb in it,
you're just not building that much.
You're not making the heat. Right. And you'll know, because they have a thermal protector in them anyway. But, and then I think the other part, John, are the retrofit LEDs that are the actual trim ring and the bulb.
Yes. My gosh.
Those are the greatest things, because they seal up that can light so that you're not leaking air out of the house.
And they're simple to install.
Very simple.
They've got like 5 temperature settings.
Yes.
It's like, I died and went to bulb heaven.
Yeah, it is
that's pretty slick.
One of my most favorite things is to be able to get rid of it, because especially if you start looking at buying if you were buying a regular, just now an LED bulb and a new trim ring, because you know how they yellow over time.
Yep. Yes.
You can do that whole thing and change them out for less money, and you have a cooler light. And I mean not cool just because it's cool, but it's K-O-O-L too, right?
Kelvin, degrees Kelvin.
Kelvin, that's right. Yes. So, so lots of advantages to the LED industry.
All right. Next up, what do you do when your outlet has no ground? Don't go away. That mystery will be solved if you call 704-570-1110 or continue to listen when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110 is our number. Bobby has called. Let's talk to Bobby. Good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. Bobby, how are you?
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing well.
So I have a bathtub that the house was its original tub in the late 60s, and it gets part-time use.
Okay.
And I've noticed the drain after showering takes a while to get down, down the drain. And it gotten a little bit worse just over time, just over a longer period of time. So I just pulled up the drain plug and fished out some gunk, whatever, thought that would help. Mm-hmm. But now it's even draining slower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Besides all the contradictory videos on YouTube, what is a good home remedy, or is it time for the plumber?
You just have to move, Bobby. You just have to move. There's no. You got to find a good realtor. What you probably did is just disturb some of the funk in there, and you didn't quite get it all out. Were you able to take the stopper all the way out, or did you work around the stopper?
Yes, I took it out.
Okay, that's good. I think, David, if you can get the stopper all the way out, I would get there's a Zip-It device. I don't know how you fished it out. Coat hanger, Zip-It. Zip-It is a piece of plastic that has kind of reverse barbs on it, so it slides down into the drain easily, and then it grabs all the hair and the nasties and pulls them out.
Yeah.
And, right, so if you did that, great. My strong suspicion is because you said this doesn't get all the time used, there may have been some things that have hardened a little bit in that line over a period of time, and so they're not just going to come get pulled out. Before I called the plumber, I would get a little drain auger, a manual drain auger. This is a small little snake.
I'm sorry, I'm having problems with this phone connection. Some what?
A little manual auger, a drain auger. You can pick them up at your home improvement store. Home Depot has them in the plumbing aisle, and it'll just snake out that pipe a little bit farther. And then a trick that David taught me that I use all the time is getting a big old, like a Dutch oven or a double boiler of hot water and actually heating it up on the stove. I don't bring it to a boil, but I'll get it good and hot. Once I've, you know, kind of snaked out or pulled out with the zip and all the funk, I'll pour that full pot of hot water down, and it just clears it up, and no chemicals, you know, no plumbers, and that does the trick. If there's still a problem, but David, I think that's because it got slower after he did it. I don't think it's a venting problem, do you?
No, I think it just pushed the clog. Think it just pushed it in there further.
Yeah, so I think if you get that snake and then some hot water, I think you'll be very pleased, and you won't have to call the realtor.
Okay. Yeah, have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. Appreciate your call. Could it be? Well, there you go.
Yeah. That almost always solves the problem.
Yeah.
I've had many people. I did it a couple of years ago for the bathroom sink and the tub, and the homeowner was they were amazed that it was just and really, we just used hot water. I didn't have a Zip-It with me, but I told them what to get, and I'm sure that they went and bought them, and that turned out really well. So,
as we were packing the house, you know how many Zip-Its I found?
How many?
Six.
Good for you. I always buy them like that too. So, but I'm not. I throw them away after.
I actually clean them off. I know you hate that. That's like the big thing, right?
Yeah, that's not my thing. I can't do it. Usually I'll get it down in there and get it all positioned, and I say, okay, Gina,
let's get this.
Come get this. I got something for you. Well,
it's your hair anyway.
Yeah, it is her hair. It's not mine. Mine's already been washed away.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yours is gone. I share the pain or the whatever. All right. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. I teased before the break. What do you do if you have an outlet and it has no ground? So it's like two prongs, no little round one for a ground in the plug. So therefore, it has no ground in the wire. Do we tell the owner the same thing we told Bobby? Sell the house, get a realtor?
Yeah. No. There's a fix for that. So if you can't get a ground wire to the box easily, then you can put a GFI receptacle in that space. If you can find the head, the main receptacle, or where the line comes into the first receptacle, because if you understand when the wire comes in one box, it goes from that box to the next box to the next box. So if you find the first box, then you put the GFI in there, then you protect the rest of them. So you're not creating a ground, but what you're doing is you're creating an interrupter. So if it detects a fault, if something shorts out, it'll trip that receptacle, And it's almost as good as having a ground. Now, so, the caveat is you got to put the label on that that says that it's not, this is not a grounded receptacle.
I was going to say, so the new, what do you call it, chip-driven GFIs, will they even function if there's not a ground present?
I don't know. That's a good question. And I know we got a, probably 100 electricians listening out there, so they'll let us know.
One of 100, please call us and tell us. My strong suspicion is that this it will read no ground and just not function, but let's find out. And this just in, Gail called and says you can get zipline augers cheap at dollar store, at the dollar store. There you go. You heard it here. 704-570-1110. Seriously, APB, if you're out there, electrician does do the new chip-driven GFIs function if there's no ground present. Let's go to a new topic, David. Don't laugh at me. Just like, how do you build a retaining wall? you just put some stuff up that holds the dirt back. What's your next question?
You just call the guys that do it.
Yeah. So I thought we could talk about it because it's actually a cool conversation. If you have you want to do a retaining wall, a couple courses, you know, 2, 3, maybe even 4. I say that's a good do-it-yourself project. If you've, you know, if the lay of the land is such that you don't have a whole bunch of site work to do, although you can rent the, you know, the little mini excavators and stuff like that through the Home Depot. And if you want to do that stuff, my neighbor is like, he's into it, man. He goes and gets all those things. He's leveling. He leveled his backyard out to make a kind of a plateau for the kids to play in. He just went at it. I'm like, good for you.
Yeah.
But so you could do some of that. But I think the trick with a retaining wall is always what I used to call like the dead man. They actually use like strips and stuff now when you're using the old castle blocks and stuff, I think, right?
Right.
But that's the biggest piece of it. And then the second part is drainage.
Yeah, you have to relieve the water pressure behind the wall. So whatever you're holding back, there needs to be layers and layers of gravel on the back side of that retaining wall so that it will drain the moisture away. Because if you don't, the wet dirt will expand and it'll push the wall over.
Yeah.
And people still look at me like I'm, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's like,
you think it's because, like, it's something you said?
I'm like, no, I'm serious. I really am serious. And they're like, what do you mean the dirt expanded and pushed the wall over? I had a customer that happened to, and it pushed the wall completely over. It turned out to be a very, very expensive project for those folks. As no fault of their own, other than they put a paver driveway in, which let more water in the dirt that was behind the retaining wall. But there was no drainage whatsoever behind that wall, and that's what happened. And it had been there since the 80s.
Yeah. There's,
and then so it happened.
I know we've got to come to a break here, but I think the bottom line is fundamentally you can do some decorative little retaining walls for gardens and stuff like that. But if you're going to do true retention of dirt, et cetera, that is not a do-it-yourself project, because even if you're going to backfill to it, like how you backfill to it and how you cut away for the wall, all will determine whether that wall stands, you know, moves on you, or if the dirt behind the wall begins to cave in, right?
Well, so, yeah. And here's the other part of it is if it's over 4 feet tall, it has to be engineered and permitted.
Okay.
So once you get to that point, then now you're with now you got to be dealing with experts.
Yeah. So, all right. There you have it. We're going to take a break, folks. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. We're at 704-570-1110. And we'll talk when we come back from these important messages. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call. We're 704-570-1110. Let's do our product of the week. It's a good one this week, I think. Or it wouldn't be the product of the week. But it's manufactured by Loco, and it's a 26-inch two-burner classic smart temp propane flat-top grill. So it's the flat-top, like the griddle grill. I'm kind of liking that, actually. What I like about this, though, is a couple things. Number one, it comes with a thermostat. So you can set the temperature to what you want, and it adjusts the gas flow to keep the temperature stable, and it doesn't require electricity to do that. The design of the burners underneath the flat top is such that it fundamentally eliminates hot and cold spots. You know, like when you have the griddle, like there's a spot that, like, nothing cooks, and then the other thing where everything just like instantly ignites. That's a bit of hyperbole, but so there's just a lot of technology into the thing. Super convenient. It's got a kind of a cool chalk finish, but I tend not to be too worried about what the finish looks like. But David, it comes in at like $275. So it's like, it's perfect.
Yes.
And it's a great way to start the summer and have a little fun outdoors.
Yes, sir. We love ours.
They're pretty. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's nice. Great. You could do a lot on it because we have a 36-inch.
Uh huh.
And it's nice because it's you can cook different things on it and different burners. You know, it has different burners. So the key is just to make sure that you oil it up right and get it seasoned.
Yeah,
that's the key.
That is it. I think people talk about, man, I love going to this diner or whatever. I mean, I love the short order cooks, but I think half the battle is just that grill has been seasoned over so many years. It's just like, be hard not to cook good stuff on it,
right? Everything
now, the Department of Health is checking that out. But I remember a friend of mine from high school, we went back to the Jersey Shore just for grins one year, and we found this little diner place that we eat breakfast there every morning because it was like awesome. And then on the way out the last day, my buddy jabs me in the side and goes, hey, check that out. He pointed to the, you know, they have the health department, you know, cleanliness rating. It was like, I don't know, a D minus or a 60 or something. It said marginally satisfactory or marginally unsafe or something. We're like, well, that was good.
As long as you heat the food up hot enough, you'll be fine.
That's right. Kill it. David, what are the benefits of oversized downspouts?
Gets the water out faster. One, because it gives more surface area. So here's the thing. Most people think that the water fills that pipe up, but it doesn't. It actually clings to the side of it and rolls around that pipe and goes down.
To let air up the middle,
It lets air up the middle. So it makes more sense. It makes sense that if the pipe is bigger on the inside, you have more surface area for the water to cling to, which will let the water out of the gutters faster. The other nice thing about oversized downspout.
It's pretty prevalent.
Yeah. We're just blowing it today.
So, new lips, everybody.
Anyway, less debris will get stuck in those pipes. They're a little bit larger, so it's going to let it's going to let minor debris flow through. I have all of my downspouts.
So diminutive debris. Is disposed debris. Of with dispatch.
There you go. You're good with the D's.
Yes, sir. Talking to my teachers all through high school.
The me too. Except shop. Still got my picture in that room, I'm sure. I did not put downspout drains on my building. I have two downspouts at the back of the building. But I get up there sometimes and I'll get pine straw and whatnot out. But most of the time, the debris has washed out. I can see it come out of the downspouts. And I have 6-inch gutters, but I have oversized downspouts, and it does a pretty good job of letting that debris out. I put some guards in the downspouts that go into my drains. I don't have covers over my gutters.
With the little net kind of ball looking.
Yeah,
things
that's
in there?
Exactly. Okay. And you cloth. Squeeze those and you twist them and you put them down in the downspouts. And then when it's raining real hard, sometimes I can see if the gutters overflow a little bit at that point, then I know that there's enough debris build up around those screens. I jump on the ladder, reach up there, clean that out, pop them back in, and no problem. But that keeps the bulk of the larger debris from going down in my pipes that are in the ground, because you don't want that. And even though I put PVC in and not corrugated, So they're you can clean them, because I also put clean outs in because we have such long runs.
Yeah.
That I would be able to stick a hose down in there and blow that out if I had to. But
where'd you put clean outs?
Halfway, like
in the run,
in the runs, yeah, and they stick up in the yard. Mm-hmm.
Smart.
Yeah, it worked pretty well. So I figured I ought to do it while I'm doing it. So, yeah, that is those work great for that. Now, if you're like your lot, John, where you're completely covered in trees, then you obviously have to put something over the gutters.
Yeah, the gutter guard.
Or you'll constantly be up there, you know. But if it's moderate and if it's not a huge deal. Sometimes it's cheaper just to clean your gutters, you know, multiple times a year versus spending, you know, a lot of money on some type of a gutter guard that eventually has to be removed anyway, and you still have to go in and clean the gutters because gravel, you know, even if it's got a screen over it,
then it's
algae, mold, mildew, it will grow in there, and that hampers the drainage. So
plus it lets those big old American cockroaches,
yeah,
breed. All right, we got to take a break. It's the last break. It's get your questions ready, 704-570-1110. We'll talk when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. That's our number. Give us a call. We'll talk about your questions. David. What is an air admittance valve?
An air admittance valve is a device that you put on the plumbing underneath the sink, or you can put it in a wall with a grill over top of it. When you cannot get a vent up and out through a wall, so a perfect example of that would be an island with a sink. Right. Used to be they can vent them, but it's complicated. I don't know if you've ever seen a U vent, John, but they actually have the pipe, but then they have a vent that comes off and goes back down and then goes back to another area for a vent.
It doesn't have to be gravity driven because there's no water. Well, as long as it's not a wet vent, but that wouldn't be
correct. And so, but an air admittance valve is much cheaper and much simpler to do. The labor cost used to be the issue with running a vent out of an island like that, but now it's the cost of the material too, because PVC is expensive.
PVC is crazy. It's resin, it's oil stuff.
So anyway, that is that's what an air admittance valve. That's where you use them, and what they do is it whenever you're letting water out of the sink, you say you pull the plug and it's going down. It'll airlock in there because you have all that water going down in that opening at once. And so if you have when that air admittance valve senses that, it has a little flapper in it that pops open. It allows air in and it'll allow that to drain down, and then it'll close back up so that the sewer gas will not come back out.
The aroma.
And that'll hold it back. So pretty cool invention. There's some ingenuity somebody was thinking when they invented that. So just make sure that
Boniface Studer.
Correct.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what his first name was.
But anyway, if you do have to put one in, make sure that it's approved for the plumbing, because there's some available out there that are on the market that aren't actually approved for that will meet the code.
Good point.
So pay attention to that. Yep.
It's
too good to be true. It's probably too good to be true.
Yeah, usually, especially in those manner of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. It was called a Studer vent. I mean, that kind of like Kleenex's facial tissue and so on. But kind of a cool solution where, you know, to put a drain in somewhere that you know, that would be difficult to vent. But it also kind of is on the same principle of what you talked about with the downspout, right? Because the water, like water has to have air to move through the center of the pipe. It's not just downspout. All your drain pipes work the same way. So it's a way to make it work. I'm looking down the list here. Oh, I just have down here rug surfing. Do you know what rug surfing is?
No.
Yeah. It's when you have like a throw rug or a runner on a hardwood floor,
Now I do. Just had a little vision pop through my head.
It's kind of a cool thought. I'm going to talk to the grandkids about that and see what we get mom all stirred up. But I'll regret that. Anyway, so this came, but I have no idea why this ended up in the notes here. But it was just a reminder that it's a safety thing. And I think what it was is I was going through some stuff, just some safety and ADA things for home, like universal design and stuff. And the question was, you know, loose rugs or rugs. Some folks, like my parents, were famous for this. They had throw rugs on top of their carpet, right, because they didn't want the carpet to wear out. On a hardwood floor, a rug that doesn't have a gripper pad beneath it is a trip hazard or a slip hazard, particularly for an elderly person. But young bucks like you and me can have problems too. And it does eliminate the opportunity to rug surf, but small price to pay. I don't remember what those things cost, but they're inexpensive. I've used them for all manner of things. Even when I was doing woodworking, like I would put it under the piece, you know, that I was whatever routing or, and it that I didn't need to clamp, and it just held it in place. So it's a gripper. It's cool.
They work well.
They work well. Here's one, though, that takes a minute. It's like the concern or issue was multiple nail pops. I feel like we don't see that quite as much as we used to, because most drywall installers now are using a screw gun and screwing the drywall in. It's just easier and faster. It's a little more expensive from a fastener perspective, but if you're in an older home, or if the drywall is hung with nails versus screws, and even some screws, sometimes you can have some issues. The question was, like, how do you fix a drywall pop nail, and you really fix them with screws, don't you?
We always do, yes.
Just go either side of the pop nail, sink a screw, bang your nail back in.
Either that or pull it out if you can get to it.
Yeah.
Because you almost need to use a nail set to drive it in further, because you don't want to make a big hammer dimple on the wall. So if you take a nail set or a punch and drive that nail deeper, if you can't pull it out, if it's sticking out enough, you try to pull them out, because it'll loosen up again if you don't get it in there far enough.
Right. And I don't know, for the longest time, I only knew of or used or sold ring shank drywall nails.
Yes.
Right. So they had the kind of the barbed shank on them. So it went in easily, but then it got stuck in the wood if it tried to back out. Right. And, but wherever I've had nail pops and pulled a nail out, as you say, it's always been a smooth shank. So,
yeah. Well, a lot of times you'll see guys they'll use roofing nails.
Yeah, because they got a big head.
Got a big head on them, and they'll use those on the perimeter and screws in the field of the board, but they'll pop out underneath the tape. You know, the ones on the bottom usually don't matter because they're underneath the baseboard, and if you're using crown molding, it doesn't matter, but the ones on the edges sometimes can be a problem.
Yeah. So here's one that I think is a good question. I think the answer is yes. Is a garbage disposal replacement a do-it-yourself job?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Yeah. It's just like connecting what's already there. Take a picture if you're not sure, if you're not particularly intuitive about those things. Snap a couple pictures. And The one trick or the one reminder you have to get is the garbage disposal comes equipped as if it can support a dishwasher, but it's built as if no dishwasher is present.
Correct.
And there, where the dishwasher hose goes in, there's a knockout, kind of like a knockout on an electrical box, only it's a watertight knockout. So you got to take a screwdriver and best to do that before you install it.
Correct.
If you're going to have I've helped people through it. Like, okay, now you got to turn off the power and reach down in there and pull that little piece of metal out.
Yeah, if you get your hand in there, that's the problem.
Then you call in Gina again.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's a great thing. If you don't have a garbage disposal in place, you may or may not be because you got to have power underneath there. And you may have it for, you know, I don't know, other things. But if it's not in place, I don't know, I'd be leery about a do-it-yourself job. It probably wouldn't cost you like a second mortgage to get a plumber out to do a garbage disposal.
Well, yeah, and that's and the plumbing's one thing, but if there's no electrical there,
that's a big challenge.
And that depending on where the sink is located, it could be a huge challenge to get a wire in there. It could be, you know, they can do it, don't get me wrong, and you know, you can always drill up and through the bottom of the cabinet. A lot of times when they do that now, John, they'll put a receptacle and then they'll put a cord on the dishwasher, the
yes.
disposal.
Yeah.
And then you're plugging it in. So, and then, you know, you can always consider an air switch too, so that you don't have to have a switch on the wall. And
that's what we have. Yeah, that's kind of nice.
They are nice. If you don't, you know, especially if you're on an island and you don't have a wall, you know, we chose to put a wall on our, where our sink is, so that it kind of blocks your view from the other room. So if there's dishes in there in the sink or on the counter, which hardly ever is, but it hides it. So
yeah, I was having a hard time to think that either David or Gina would let anything dirty stand for more than 36 seconds at the Doval residence. I'm proud of you. That's good.
It's a curse.
Yeah. Barb's the same way. It's like, you know that movie where the dog sees a squirrel and goes, squirrel? Like, that's Barb with dirt. Just dirt. She's off. All right, 704-570-1110, but not this week. Next week, because we're done. Folks, thanks for being with us. It's been 2 hours of fun for us. I hope it's been informative for you. We love to remind you at the end of each one of these shows that we think that the most important kind of home improvement you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Don't forget to work on that project this week, and we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.